guys, welcome back to The Grit.
So good to be here.
It is. It's a final day of actually.
No, leap day is tomorrow.
Leap day tomorrow. Dang.
Do you know anybody born on leap day?
I don't.
No. I mean, but you've known people born on, you've known leap year babies in the past. You never had a kid in school who was like, I'm four.
When conceptually, I'm familiar with it, but yeah. I can't think of anybody that I have known personally.
I was always pretty jealous of the kids because, I mean, to be born on leap day is like, it's rare, right?
It is rare.
It's like having that rare kind of blood type, which I was jealous of those kids too.
It's like a superpower almost. Yeah.
I shouldn't have been really jealous of the kids with the rare blood types. Then you're stuck, right? If there's mass transfusion problem. But I always thought the kids with the rare blood types, the kids born on leap day, I always wanted to be the unique. And I wasn't very unique.
Speaking of your youth.
How did you like that?
Oh my God.
How epic was that? Dude. It was really, really, really funny.
This is a testament to our listenership.
That's beautiful.
I got an email the other day that goes, hey, I don't know if I'm the first person who ever recognized this, but Chaz is a doppelganger of Wilbur Kuchmeier.
It was uncanny.
From Surfer Magazine.
The likeness was uncanny.
How did nobody recognize this?
I have no idea.
The greatest part of it was that he found your yearbook photo from, what was that, junior high?
Maybe high school? Probably early high school. Probably
ninth,
like,
grade or something?
Yeah, probably freshman year.
So high school photo right next to Wilbur's photo.
Uncanny.
Crazy.
Yeah,
you are Wilbur Kuchmeier.
I mean, that has to go up
in all ways.
Is that going to go up on the
if I have your permission, I will put it up.
Please, of course.
Well, what was funny about it was and the reason why it's a testament to our listeners is not only making the connection, but how did he find your yearbook?
Yeah, there must be a website. It made me think too. Oh, is there a website where you can go? There must be a website where just high school's digitized, I'm sure, their yearbooks, right? And there's yeah, because I don't think I've ever put my yearbook picture on.
I just presumed he knew somebody who went to high school with you, or he went to high school with you and he had the yearbook.
I mean, could have been that too, I guess.
Yeah, but it's not like you live in Encinitas. Well, you didn't grow up in Encinitas.
Yeah, no.
You know?
Coos Bay, Oregon.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, pretty epic. And I think we need to just replay that joke over and over. Like, whoever has old Surfer magazines and can find images and different poses of you, and we can just keep recycling a different version
of this. I guarantee now, like, because I hadn't thought about Wilbur Kuchmeier in a long time.
Me either.
But I guarantee that if there's a picture of me on a board, it probably looks exactly like Wilbur Kuchmeier standing on a board.
And I want to see, like, his trials and tribulations,
yeah.
Because I guarantee there's more overlap than we're even aware of.
For sure. It's funny because I like everybody grew up and flipping through the Wilbur Kuchmeier comics and never made the connection myself. It made me really stare at that picture and think I do look spittingly exactly like him.
Similar haircut.
A whole thing.
Yeah.
How did it never cross my mind that, oh, I'm Wilbur Kuchmeier?
I don't know.
I should have.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I thank whoever the listener is. It made me chuckle so deeply deep into the night.
The other thing that made me chuckle is he didn't even post it publicly.
No.
He could have easily went on Beach Grit comment section and posted it, but he just did it discreetly just to me, knowing I'd be the only one potentially who laughed.
Do you think that he thought my feelings might be hurt?
Possibly.
What a nice guy.
Yeah. I think most of the world is that way.
Yeah. But my feelings.
Most of the world is considerate of other people's feelings.
Yeah.
Despite your little echo chamber.
I don't have any and don't assume anyone has any either.
How's that McDonald's coffee?
It's not bad.
Is it?
Yeah. I'm a fan every once in a while, to be honest, of horrible coffee.
Is it horrible though?
No, but, okay. But you know, like AM PM coffee, like getting on the road and getting a AM PM. Like, I don't do it in my home. I'm not a coffee snob at all. I'm pretty, yeah.
Which I'm surprised by, because you served me good coffee when I was at your home.
Yeah, I mean, I like...
French pressed.
I like a French press, but that's it, right? It doesn't get any fussier than that. There's no pour over,
right.
You know. There's no fancy vacuum, anything. No weird, I hate whatever, third wave, second wave, whatever wave those fruity beans are. Like, I like my coffee burnt. I like it black. But I like it. I like a good bean to start.
Yeah, I also like good coffee, but I am more of a snob, and I will not drink crappy coffee. Like, if I was in the scenario, and I've been in that scenario lots of times traveling, where there isn't, the only decent coffee would be Starbucks, and I will just go without coffee.
See, but that's
even part, Starbucks isn't good enough.
That's part of why you have to inoculate, perpetual inoculation. You always, that's why before I come here too, oftentimes I will eat a McDonald's sausage cheese burrito just for when coronavirus wipes everybody out and the only food left is fast food. Yep. I won't have a stomachache. I'll be good. I've inoculated myself against both bad coffee and fast food.
Wow, this is a long-term plan.
It is.
Long-term strategy that may never even come to fruition.
It's also why I don't drink a lot of water, because when water runs out, I'll be cooking just fine. Yeah. I don't need water. As long as vodka doesn't run out, which vodka is the, all it is distilled anything, right?
You can make it out of anything.
Anything.
But don't you need water to make it?
I don't know. I probably could make like shoe vodka or something. I bet you could throw anything in a vat and eventually it turns to vodka.
You'll have like a team of children that you employ that are running and sweating and you're taking their perspiration
exactly
off their body.
I mean, that's probably a good vodka right there.
Child sweat vodka. How do you feel about tipping a barista? If you go, this could be a barrel or not. Like if you are at one of these fancy coffee shops that we're talking about, there's a tip jar there, and I see almost every person in line tipping the barista simply for getting, doing exactly what they are paid to do.
Ooh, you're one of those.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
I mean, if I pay cash, I tip typically the coins, or if they give me a 5 and a 1 and 75 cents, I'll tip $1.75, right?
Like, really?
Always.
$1.75 on a $3.75 coffee.
Yeah, I never even am calculating what my percentage is of that. When you say it like that, it does sound, but no, yeah, it's, I'll always throw what I have. And if I pay with card, it's $1 every time.
For what?
I just feel that, I don't know. I'm a tipper in general.
Wow.
Yeah. I like it. I like it when I don't have to. Like Lowell yesterday went to Sugarfish. Have you ever been to Sugarfish?
No, but sushi? I know it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's not a fancy sushi, but a good
it
sushi.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah.
It's, well, it's expensive.
I have a good Sugarfish story.
Okay.
Did I tell my good Sugarfish story
of
here
course.
Before? Did I told it?
Oh no, you should.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yesterday, anyway, I can't even remember what I was talking about. Sugarfish.
Tipping.
Oh, yeah. So Sugarfish and Kazunori, his like role thing, they don't have tip. You're not allowed to tip. Like it's
built into the bill.
It's built into the bill. And okay. So I like that system a lot. I like that European system. But I'll tip if I, you know, yeah, I'm a tipper. Anyway, Kazunori. Yeah,
go Sugarfish.
Sugarfish. So went to Sugarfish. It was in Calabasas, I think. With family, wife, daughter, friends, their daughter. Sugarfish, for those who don't know, is kind of an up-ish scale sushi restaurant, like, and very, like, specific. I can't remember what the sushi chef's name is who started it, but...
But it's on trend right now.
It's on trend, and there's no, like, no substitutions, no... It's one of those where you don't go in and say, well, I like the roll with this, right? It's just you get your sushi to how it's gotten. Totally fine. This place, though, in Calabasas, was in like an upscale strip mall. So it's not like it's like this standalone, you know, epic experience. It was lunch, whatever, rocked in. My kid doesn't eat sushi, really. So, but you know, like an avocado roll. So asked, hey, could you guys just do an avocado roll? And the fussy waiter gave me the real like, no, we don't, you know, we don't do any exceptions. And made zero, like didn't even say I could just bring her a bowl of rice. There was like, not even 1 ounce of give. So I said, okay, fine. There was a Vons down the street, right? I mean, it's literally a strip mall sushi place at this point. It's Sugarfish, but still strip mall sushi. I go down to the Vons, buy her an avocado roll, bring it back in. Waiter comes over and says, I'm sorry, you know, no outside food in here or something. And I was like, well, you're not giving me anything here. Like we had already ordered at this point a lot of sushi, I think,
right.
And drinks and everything. And well, we're spending a lot of money. You're giving me no room to work here. Bring your manager over. Manager says the same thing. At that point, I'd become so rage-filled that basically jumped the coffee table, got up, started screaming. I think at this point, the wife was screaming too. Both of us just like yelling at the wait staff, yelling at everyone. Everyone's necks were cranked looking at us. And like, we're not paying for any of this. Like stormed out, left the bill, just... Everybody very sad. And then outside, who was sitting there? I forgot there was a celebrity couple it was like Justin Timberlake and his wife or something Jessica like that. Biel? Yeah, we're sitting there watching the entire thing take place. Way. Which I didn't even realize, but it made me so happy that I pitched the world's biggest fit in front of, I think it was JT, but it was somebody at that level. Okay. Like super high level celebrity.
Did they chase you down? I mean, are you legally obliged to pay the bill?
No, I was just screaming like, screw you. I mean, I wasn't saying screw you. I was saying way to just the baddest of words.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
In front of the kids.
In front of the kids. Like, I'm sure my daughter was crying. Like, I was just the biggest scene ever. Just loving every second of it.
Was it to prove a point, or were you that enraged and couldn't control yourself?
I was super enraged, but also I was having, once the rage built to that level, I wasn't even boozed at all. Like, I was just having so much fun with it. So much fun being righteously indignant in a, just pointing at people, smashing my finger into the manager's chest. Everybody, they were like, so.
They weren't going to fight back.
They weren't going to fight
back.
They
weren't going to try to get you to pay the bill.
Zero. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah.
That is so reflective, though, of Sugarfish being the hot chick in school right now.
Yeah.
Like, Sugarfish is, like I said, trending, and it's in big cities, and it can't grow quick enough.
Yeah.
And we are just not going to make any substitution or accommodation. And that's a fine posture to have, like,
sure,
to kind of build your allure. But when it comes down to a family who's spending probably $200...
in a strip mall.
On food in a strip mall, and the kid just wants this. The customer is right to an extent.
Completely. You know? Like, I think don't allow for the customer to change the existing menu items. Totally get that. But if the customer wants something off menu that you have both things, they could have brought just avocado and rice.
Yeah.
And
you can assemble your own.
I would have done it for her. Like, but just to be that hot, like, these are the rules. I mean, it's for my whole life. People who follow rules rigidly and religiously drive me absolutely crazy. Like, that, I think that's what, now thinking back on the incident, that's what blew me up at the manager so much, the general manager, was my hands are tied position.
Yep.
But your hands aren't fucking tied. Tell me you don't want to do it. That's fine.
Yep.
But don't tell me institutionally this cannot be done.
Right.
Like, just say, I don't want to do that for you.
There's,
and then I would have calmed down. I would have been like, great. Thank you for saying you don't want to. Don't blame your institution.
You, even in that scenario, understand the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to abide by the spirit, but you don't, the enforcer doesn't have to enforce the letter of the law.
Precisely. And if they're going to enforce the letter of the law, then take personal responsibility for enforcing the letter of the law. Say, I do not want to do this for
you.
I do not care.
Exactly.
I am not doing this.
The other thing that drives me insane is when the lowest paid employees in our society own the keys to the kingdom, and they think that they are in power. You know, whether it's the security guard at a concert or what, in this case, the server, where it's like, dude, I have respect for all people regardless of the position that you are. However, you're being a dick right now. You are trying to impose. This is the one moment in our interaction where you have more power over me, and you are going to enforce it just because you're being a dick.
Well, then imagine, though. I mean, if he would have said, if waiter would have said to me, hey, we're really not supposed to do this, but I'm going to hook you up, then he would have gotten a way bigger tip, and like, he could have made it self-serving as opposed to just, I mean, and that guy too, the guy at the concert, hey, you know, slip me a 50 and I'll let you in.
Right.
Is like, why don't they make it work for them? Why don't they make the system work for them as opposed to working for the system?
Completely. So did you tip him?
Hey, no, we got nothing. That was no tip that day. Even if I couldn't have. Yeah.
Yeah. Classic. So the tipping thing is certainly in a coffee environment. I'm against on principle alone.
Just because they're doing their job. But what differentiates a barista from a waiter, let's say?
Certainly a lot more effort put in. Like, sure, you're dealing with a waiter for an hour, let's say.
But a waiter's...
But the tip should be based on their attitude, I would say. So if they're really gregarious and friendly or whatever, or maybe they just stay out of your way during the meal because that's what that meal calls for, then that deserves a tip. What I kind of... To agree with your question, though, is I don't feel like we are we shouldn't be obligated to tip even waiters. In society, we should be able to tip, pick and choose who we tip. My mechanic deserves tips, but it's weird for me to give him a tip, so I don't tip him. Servers were obligated to tip. Baristas, on the other hand, I'm getting a cup a 16-ounce cup of coffee black. All they're doing is pouring it. It takes 20 seconds of their time, and I don't really care about, I don't need good attitude. I need neutral attitude, and that doesn't require a tip.
But they're I feel, and this is a bummer for the, you know, the company keeps wages low, I feel, and puts the extra on us, but the extra is still on us. And so that barista is making what? How much an hour? 10?
Minimum wage, whatever that is.
What is minimum?
I have no clue, dude. Well,
it shows how out of touch we are. We're not really men. We're not men of the people. We're elites. We're the one percenters. Yeah, whatever it is, though, it's like a, you know, I mean, we're funding their lives.
You know what, though? Good. I want them to feel the pressure and get out of that barista job.
But what are they going
to
do?
I want them to, whatever they want to do, pursue whatever. Work there for 6 months or whatever it is while you need to, and then move on. That's the point of minimum wage. Wow. I did it forever.
Where'd you work minimum wage?
Restaurants for tips.
Yeah. Wow. So you worked in the tip economy and are harsh with your tips.
No, I earned that. Like, I learned a ton about wine during that time. I learned everything about the menu. Like, I did a song and dance for that money.
Every time.
I mean, over time, I learned how to do that, you know, because that was the currency, literally.
I was worked as a valet. I'm sure I've shared some valet stories, but if I thought somebody wasn't going to tip, even ahead of time, if I sussed them out, I would dig through their wallet change and just steal stuff.
Dude, for sure,
yeah.
Valets are totally doing that. I don't put that above anybody.
Every time. It's funny, after working as a valet, I did not valet, even though I drove a total piece of junk, did not valet park my car for years after, if I could at all avoid it. Not to avoid the money, but just knowing what I did as a valet
I wonder what job is, once people leave that job, they never ever utilize that job again.
It's got to be valet.
Valet, I would think working at Wiener Schnitzel.
Yeah.
Big pots of chili. It's fast food.
Yeah.
Terrible things happen there.
That's totally true. I had a buddy whose buddy would lick the burritos closed at Del Taco.
Totally believe it, dude. I mean, fast food in general, you would never want to go back and eat. No. You know, it's like,
nope.
People with no morality getting basically, you know, you're dealing with people who have the lowest kind of, your customer base is just like.
These days, I feel that the fast food employee is so beat down, though, that they're just rotely going through their job, where if I go to a fast food joint, like, and see a young high school kid working, that's when I get worried.
Yeah. The saddest thing ever is when you go to a fast food joint and you see an elderly person working.
Ooh, yeah.
God, that is the saddest moment of my life.
It really does cut deep.
It does. It makes me reevaluate everything. Start pinching pennies.
Start tipping.
No more. No. Save every tip. We should talk about some non-food related stuff.
Yeah.
Serving Heritage and Culture Center, thank you for opening the doors an hour early today to let Chaz and I in.
Fantastic place.
Shack.org. And then dude, I was in Hawaii for 2 weeks. I came back. We had one episode with Devin. Then I text you the next week like, hey, let's get together and record. And you said you were in Hawaii.
Pulled the trigger last second.
What the heck, dude? Who gets to do that?
Second. The wife had extra companion. Alaska is a really fine airline for that kind of stuff. Extra companion tickets.
Okay.
Surfboards are free. And then we had a wonderful friend let us use their house while we were there.
So no airfare, no
basically no airfare, fee. No accommodation. I mean, yeah, no Dude. Airfare, no accommodation fee.
I would go all the time.
Made me really, I mean, funny. My relationship with Hawaii is, of course, or for me, of course, I have a relationship with Hawaii. Welcome to Paradise, all set in Hawaii. You know, I did my many years on the tour there, worked with Jamie O'Brien and lived there for a time. But I haven't been back in a while. It really made me remember how much I love Hawaii. I love Hawaii.
Me too.
I'll say it right now.
So as I just stated, I got back 2 weeks ago. I'm going in 2 weeks again.
Just because you got the bug that much?
It's partially that. I also slipped into vacation mode too much while I was there and didn't record nearly enough podcasts. And so while I was there, one of the guys that I spent time with was like, dude, I have a guest room. So anytime you want to come back, you could stay for free. Airfare's super cheap. I don't have the companion fare thing. But yeah, it was $400.
Oh, yeah. Basically. No worries.
Yeah. So I looked at all of these interviews that I should have done. And I was like, you know what? I got a free room. I should just go and bang out all these interviews in 1 week. So I'm going to go do that.
Are they all on the same island?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Do you have a favorite island?
I do. Yeah.
Don't say it.
I won't say it.
Good.
But Couple of Hawaii questions. So you did bring boards?
Did. Yes.
Did you surf a lot while you were there?
Every day.
Did you get good waves? Multiple times.
It wasn't good, but it was so much fun. Just being out in the warm water. And there's something about feeling that Hawaiian juice, like even the smaller waves have just that extra little kick, which there's just something really joyful about surfing in Hawaii.
I know. Everybody's image of Hawaii is big North Shore waves. But to be honest, the best days that I've ever had are like mid-range. It's not that crowded because like a lot of the locals are waiting for it to be pumping. But dude, compared to California, 4 foot there is pumping.
I mean, it made me so fall in love with surfing in a new, deeper, more profound way all over again. Just it feels so good to surf in Hawaii.
And so many of the lesser known spots, they have names, but they're not like familiar to people who grew up reading the magazines or who have never been to Hawaii. So many of those mid-range spots are so fun.
So fun. And the locals are cool usually. I mean, as long as you're not paddle to the point and start snagging waves, like there's no bad vibe.
I've never had an issue with localism there.
Yeah.
You know? How do you feel about a Mai Tai?
Love them.
Do you?
In Hawaii. That's all I'll drink.
Really?
Not all I'll drink. But yeah, every time I'll order at least, if I'm out at a restaurant, that's the drink I'm ordering is a Mai Tai.
I've never had one until this last trip.
Did you like it? Too sweet. You thought it was too sweet.
Yeah, there's huge variation between a good one and a not good one.
Sure.
So the bad ones are way too sweet and almost undrinkable. But a good one, it's still sweet as a cocktail goes, but it is a
fantastic cocktail.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a pretty good cocktail.
I mean, Mai Tai and Hawaii, there's certain things that I do every time in Hawaii. One is Mai Tai out at restaurants. The other is I'll eat as many spam musubi as I can.
Really?
I love spam musubi.
I'm all about Manapua.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah. You worked while you were there. You were publishing articles.
I was.
So I was very confused because that was exactly why I need to go back to Hawaii was I did not work while I was there nearly as much as I had intended to.
Yeah.
I did intend to, but once you get there, it's like,
it's hard. It's
the last thing I want to do.
I know.
So how'd you pull it off?
I mean, Beach Grit's just got its bony hands around my neck. I have such paranoia of letting the foot off the gas. So it's just like, I'm a man possessed. It's made me crazy.
Good for you. Honest.
Yeah.
Good for you.
It's not good, but.
Well, it's not good for your family or people who want to spend time with you, but.
And or anything else in my life. Like it's really shattering the rest of my life. I realized.
Is it sustainable?
Who knows? We'll see. I feel like I am. Did you watch Ad Astra?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I feel like I am. What's his dude? Not Brad Pitt. Tommy Lee. Like I'm out at the outer fringes right now, just going totally crazy, but not willing to leave. Not willing to change my behavior.
Such a good metaphor.
Yeah,
because for. Everybody listening to this has not seen Ad Astra. I would argue there might be two listeners who actually saw it.
Yeah.
It's Brad Pitt's new movie. James Gray is the director. And it's in outer space and it's set in the future where space travel is kind of recreational. And then he gets to outer space and it's all commercialized. It's like Disney is sponsoring this thing and that thing. But his dad was early space explorer. So he's way out on the fringes. And Brad Pitt, who's an astronaut, the government sent him out to
snag
his dad back because he went rogue. He went off mission. But really what's happening is dad realizes I am anti the commercialization of everything that's happening down there. Like space travel is supposed to do X, Y, and Z. And the corporations have turned it into A, B, and C. This is the perfect metaphor for the surf world.
Yeah.
You are out there on the fringes looking back going, I don't want to come back to the world that ELO is creating with the WSL.
Blasting nuclear blasts back to knock it all out. Space travel out.
Good.
Yeah. So I'm out there.
Wow.
Fringy.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah. Tommy Lee. Just weird. Looking weird. Looking amazing. Extra craggly.
Out in Hawaii, abandoning family obligations just to send messages back to Earth.
Just sitting and hunched over in front of my computer.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is really profound.
Yeah. It's good. It's good.
Well, the other good news is about working from home is that we're all going to be sequestered due to the coronavirus. And you have already developed the game plan for staying at home and not being exposed to other people.
Guess what I'm doing for the coronavirus?
Oh, God. I couldn't even imagine.
I am...
For the coronavirus.
I am taking my young, angelic daughter, her and I are jumping on a plane to Paris, and we're going to go Paris to Berlin on a train just to walk through zombie apocalypse coronavirus land.
You just want to give her like a firsthand accounting of...
I mean, we're going to go play in the zombie apocalypse. How, like, it's literally, the world is shutting down over this thing that, as far as I could tell, I mean, people are, correct me, everybody's going to holler and I'm going to get screamed at for being an abusive parent. But no, this is it. Like, and it's when the worst things in the world are happening, that's when you really pivot and have a lot of fun.
I see where you're going with this. So it's empty. There's no tourists. Things are going to be cheaper.
It's going to be crazy town. It's going to be us picking the rotting fruit off of fruit stands that have been abandoned. And
this is smart.
Jumping into the Hermes store that's been looted and snagging umbrellas and singing songs as we hand in hand from Paris to Berlin.
Genius.
Yep.
I love this.
In 10 days.
Just you and her?
Just me and her, and then my friend and his daughter and son and other friend and his son and son.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's a bunch, like, my daughter's the oldest, so it's three dads and five kids, all under the age of 7.
Are you going to wear masks?
I'm going to get a cute one for her, I think. I'm not, but yeah, it's going to be, it's like a party through the zombie apocalypse.
Genius.
Yeah. It's good. I'll be covering it on Beach Grit.
Okay, perfect.
Extensively.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to.
Yeah, of course.
Can't let
it foot off the gas at all.
You can't let WSL take over in terms of web ranking.
Heck no. We're smashing them right now.
I saw that.
I realize that they probably chuckle and think, yeah, well, you know, we have YouTube and like whatever else they have, that their website is not the entirety of their audience like it is for Beach Grit, but still, to smash him into oblivion feels pretty good.
Tell me what that means. How did you smash him into oblivion? For listeners who didn't see that article.
I mean, we just have, what are we, four times? I think we have four times the viewers. We have four times the visitors to beachgrit.com that WSL.com gets.
Every month, every day, or you hit that number once?
Oh, I mean, how does this work? We'll hit it. We'll even blow it out of the water more next month, I think. It's just, yeah, we have four times as many people every month on average come to Beach Grit. Then in December, it was different because of Pipeline. So they were up on us a bit, but.
So, right. Let's get into the statistics a little bit.
Yeah.
There's lies, there's damn lies, and there's statistics, right?
Yep.
So, your currency, your guys' model, Beach Grit's model, is your product is your website.
Yep.
And the model is to sell advertising based on those views.
Yep.
WSL's model isn't their website.
Of course.
Right? So it's a little bit apples and oranges.
Of course.
Plus, we're off season. So
for sure.
Their model is events, and those events run on their website. So obviously, it'll be bigger, like you said, in December or when the events.
But it's not that much. They're not that much bigger than us, even when they're full bore December, pipe running, Triple Crown. Everybody tuned in. We're still kind of right there.
Also, I stated that as if those things are fact, but the reality is Elo's transitioning away from, presumably this is Elo's direction, away from these tentpole events where it's just, and he's creating all this shoulder content that is meant to keep traction on the website.
There's still, I mean, precisely that, like, that's the whole, like, from my perspective, I get it, right? I don't understand much, but I understand that there is Facebook, there is Instagram, there is YouTube, there's these other content platforms, I'll say, and there's ways to both monetize and utilize those for your brand, all that kind of stuff, right? From my perspective, nobody owns that stuff except for Facebook, right? And so why am I going to be throwing any more than I have to on any of those platforms? I want people on the platform that I own, because then there's nobody can tell me what I can or can't say, right? I won't get kicked off. I won't have to bend to, you know, any kind of algorithmic rules or anything. We can do exactly what we want, which is, I think, why, for me, why it's so, even though I'm Tommy Lee at the edge of space, just going insane, it's still so fun to be in our playground, not somebody else's playground.
It's something that you want to continuously reevaluate as tech progresses at such a rapid clip, because there's times where what you're saying right now is absolutely true now, but 3 years ago, you needed to utilize that stuff
from
a marketing standpoint. The other thing that we all know at this point is YouTube's making that video player that doesn't buffer and that uploads so quickly and all that. They're giving it to us for, quote, free, but then they're tracking all of our information and they're utilizing that for their own benefit. So you go into that account or go into that exchange now knowing if you're going to embed that player on your site, you are still giving something out of the exchange. So it's smart. And the other thing is, I think expansion as quickly as possible was the model, like I said, a while ago, and utilizing those things to market. But now that everybody's done that, they're recognizing it's better to privatize. So Disney's pulling back rather than selling their content to Netflix and everybody else. They're pulling back and going, no, 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 we're going to do Disney Plus and stream it so that we can control. Manage our customer experience every step of the way. Yeah, and control.
Well, I mean, that's what, and again, I feel that I'm probably real backwards. I think in my perspective here, like I've, so many way smarter people than me have told me years ago, the internet is dead, right? The internet is, websites are dead. No. I mean, not the internet's dead, sorry, websites are dead. But I still feel that Beach Grit is more, is closer to Disney Plus than it is, you know, to what everybody else is trying to do.
The success of Beach Grit is creating a community.
Yeah.
It's an ecosystem and a community that exists online. It's a town square. And so those people are right in that you could do that through an app maybe, or there's like other ways that you can foster this community. It doesn't have to just be on the website, and with enough capital and kind of time, you guys could do that if you really wanted to, you know, but you can also just do it on the website. The reality is that community that you've built is happy just going to the website and sifting through the comment section to continue to find where the thread is. And so there's no point in you trying to adapt really.
Don't want to. Because
they've adapted to you guys.
Don't want to.
So, but the ELO thing with Bob Iger leaving Disney this week, it made me think, like, Iger was such a good CEO that brought Disney through really amazing era, you know, and like,
and a real, I mean, era, like, in, as far as entertainment, fraught for Disney, right? I mean, the, when you have Netflix and Amazon and everybody coming in, when you used to be one of the only content creator, not the only, but one of a handful of content creators, now everyone's creating content.
Right.
Like,
but Disney still does the best content.
Precisely.
So in terms of things that Iger did as a CEO, right? Like create, I don't know, five to seven movies a year that gross $700 million, maybe to $1 billion per film worldwide, using that that content that they create to then create all of this merchandise and paraphernalia that people then support that generates probably more than the film itself, then direct people to the amusement parks because you have little theme centers built around these movies.
While also buying Star Wars
then
and all this.
Acquiring things like Star Wars. So there's all these acquisitions going. Plus, so this, and they all spin off of one another, but, and feed one another, but it all starts with content, right? So then he recognizes, because of the way the technology is advancing, that we need our own content streaming platform. So they get into that and they do that really, really well. That is what a CEO should and should do. That is the pinnacle example. Then I look at our world, the surf world, and I think, name a CEO currently of any of the brands. You probably can't. Any of the surf clothing brands.
Yeah.
And then look at the WSL. Who has been an icon CEO? It's like everybody kind of flounders in the position, and they certainly don't, they don't even execute what their ambitions are most of the time. They transition what their concepts are and what, and then they get pushback, so they come up with a new thing. ELO could be the first one. ELO's the first who has actual direction, actual experience in the field.
But I still haven't, he still hasn't produced anything. That's the thing. Like there's all kinds of smoke. And every time that, you know, his press releases or whatever, interviews are always amazing just because it's such corpo speak. But what has he done besides Unhinged, or what's the stinking show with, with,
Transformed.
Yeah. Besides Transformed, literally, and selling HBO 24/7, which is bad. Theoretically, this pro Ultimate Surfer show coming up, right? Where that's okay. That's one thing, but like that ain't no seven films a year like Disney's doing, plus everything else. I mean, how hard is it to make more content? Daily content.
He's got a lot more work ahead of him than Iger did. Like Iger comes into this giant world
machine.
Yeah. And I guess maybe in a sense, like it's harder to re-engineer the machine for Iger.
How hard is it for stinking ELO though to go partner with content creators already doing stuff. And hey, we're just going to bring you in. We're going to throw you a little money. I mean, from Ben Gravy on to whoever, right? Because he wants this big tent. And so find whoever. There's so many surf content creators who are just doing it for their own love.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you don't start. I mean, why not bring Who Is JOB in-house? Like, or do a deal with Who Is JOB that will, you know, will supplement Red Bull's budget for this. And up your clicks, you know, for your AdSense and all that, and like host it exclusively on Red Bull and WSL for the first whatever.
Well, a couple of thoughts. What would the incentive be for JOB? He has his own platform. I don't think that he needs, the only incentive would be if it was an acquisition.
If
WSL comes in and goes, we're not going to partner with you in this false promise of being able to give you more clicks. We are going to give you $8 million.
Yeah.
And we're going to take your thing and we're going to hire you to continue to do it. But that would be Jamie's only incentive.
Sure.
Because Jamie realizes he doesn't need him. He's living way better than he ever thought that he would.
That's true. But if they came in and, I mean, they're, and I'm not saying that that's the ideal play, but there would theoretically be a play there. It's a
worthy one. That's what I'm kind of getting at, though, is what is the play? Like,
It'd be a collab thing with Red Bull, I think, where Red Bull and the WSL presents Who Is JOB. It lives exclusively on Red Bull and WSL or whatever thing, right?
Red Bull's already got JOB. They're looking at the WSL as a potential competitor.
I don't think they are anymore. I think that the competition days between Red Bull and WSL is over. Okay. I think now it's all about synergies. It's all about, you know.
So it's an interesting example, JOB, because that's not what the WSL has done. That's not what Elo has done. He's instead gone more mainstream and do the ultimate surfer thing. And I think that highlights one thing that you and I have been criticizing all along, which is you don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get it. Going to the, whatever the network, is it NBC?
I think it's ABC.
ABC? Whatever network you went to, there's almost zero chance that that can work. Like, from the get-go, it's the wrong...
The problem... Funny, I was in a room yesterday, Hollywood room yesterday, having a meeting, and hearing the top executives at a major, major, major player were talking about not being able to even begin to get their heads around surfing because of they could totally understand it as a concept or as a thing, surfing, but professional surfing, because how in the world do you judge one wave better than the other, right? Was the end of their thing, which is complete, like, surfing is not boxing. There's no knockout. There's no, you know, what? It's not the 100-meter dash where one guy is clearly faster. It's none of that stuff. It's a judged sport, which is very, very, very difficult to have that moment for the audience who doesn't surf to understand what is better than what, right? I wrote about it on Beach Grit. I think Nick Carroll made the argument. Oh, I wrote it when I was in beautiful Hawaii. Nick Carroll made the argument that Kanoa Igarashi or surfing in the Olympics is going to totally crack it open, right? And now there's going to be real stars that get made from this moment, which I completely disagree with him in that surfing is impossible. And he tied it to Shaun White, right? Like, the Olympics made Shaun White a household name. Surfing will have its Shaun White moment coming out of Tokyo. Because Shaun White was doing something that was instantly, even though it's also judged, half-pipe snowboarding, you can see with your eyes somebody going higher and spinning faster than the other guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy to discern, or it was back then.
Because they're on the same half-pipe.
Yeah, and they're on the same half-pipe, and they're really high in the air. So you can think, just even to the guy who doesn't know anything, visually I understand, or I can feel like I understand. How in the world are people going to know the difference between a little tap off the lip and, you know, a
finner
and a finner and a roundhouse cut back to the whitewash bash and 3-foot Japanese beach break?
Well, they won't in Japanese beach break, but that's the argument for the wave pool, is they are on the same exact quarter pipe, and you can measure the difference in the height with their airs.
But nothing was more boring
exactly
than Kelly's pool. And I'd even argue that Stab High and all that is fine, but Stab High is would not be interesting to the layperson, right? Because they're not going high enough.
Right.
Like, the layperson, there needs to be actual amplitude for the layperson to say, oh, wow, look at that. They'll do it in Chopu. So Chopu, I think, is the surfing's best chance to have no Sean White's going to come out of there, but there'll be, if Chopu is grinding, that's a spectacle. That's a spectacle that the layperson can sit and understand.
Yes, but it still doesn't generate a Sean White. Like,
it's, no, for sure.
They can only watch it as a novelty. They don't understand the technical kind of nuance between a 5-point ride and a 10-point ride.
Zero. They'll see, and who knows? The person who comes out a hero could be the guy who goes over the falls. You know, I mean, the biggest wipeout could generate the biggest headline.
So I just published 2 days ago an interview with Akilah Aipa, surfboard shaper, who also super smart dude. I was shocked actually how articulate and bright he was and fast. But he was talking about what we really need to do in terms of judging is create five disciplines. So the judges need to have like a 5-discipline criteria. And it's on a point scale. And then you just add up the points at the end. And the disciplines are so well defined that you could take somebody who's never seen surfing before and put them in the judging position. And they can just read the criteria and watch and the surfer on the wave and assign a score to it.
That's pretty brilliant because it shouldn't be that hard.
Well, this started by, you know, us mutually acknowledging that all the judges are surfers. And as a surfer, you absolutely have favorite surfers that you've grown up watching and having a fondness for. So how could you not be influenced by that? So if John Florence paddles out against Jeremy Flores, you know, I already like John. And so I can't pull that mask away. I can't pull that filter off of my viewing. All of the judges are subject to that. So it's inherently flawed. It just is.
Do you think that their personal preferences come honestly into play that much? I bet it's. I bet it's more the fact that they travel with the surfers, right? They're all in the same hotels and the same places every single one of those competitions. That's why I still don't understand, especially if you're looking, which WSL sometimes seems to be, and sometimes seems to be in spending mode. But if you're looking to cut some costs, why not have the judges back in Santa Monica? There's absolutely...
And that serves a lot of benefit, by the way.
You
not
never,
just T&E.
Precisely. Yeah. You never see them anyway. It's not like they need to be there. No. They're not... I don't think they're allowed to watch the wave live, right? I think they need...
Okay.
I think the whole thing is based upon what you see on the screen. Right. I think. I could be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure that's how they judge. And so anyway, and it doesn't even matter, seeing them live versus seeing them on the, if you have all the angles.
Right.
Same diff. And that's what we're seeing anyway. Exactly. Is we're not seeing the live version. We're seeing the...
So it jives with what you and I saw.
Precisely. And then that way you take them out of the play. You should never have the judges ever commingling with the surfers. Ever. Not even one chance encounter.
Completely agree. I think it's they champion the idea that like, no, we're making this objective and we're not subject to... those influences that you're talking about or our, you know, favorite surfer or anything like that. I think it's so disingenuous to even try to make that argument. How could anybody remove themselves from that level of influence? And if you even think that you can, you're delusional.
Especially when it's coming down to 0.001 or whatever to a tenth of a point, then for sure, if you have a favorite surfer, I would imagine.
And who doesn't?
Yeah, you're going to have...
You can't even call yourself a surfer if you don't have favorites.
Yeah, you're going to kick it one-tenth over.
So the only thing that makes sense is to have non-surfers view it and judge it.
Santa Monica.
Yeah.
I mean,
from a remote location.
We could actually do this, you know. We could get a panel of non... We could set up a criteria like whatever IPA had, right? Take that criteria... Get 5 non-surfers to agree to come down. All we'd need is like 3 heats and just see if we can win. If their judgment, if they pick the better surfer out of each of those heats.
Agreed.
Right?
And then compare that to what the WSL happened. Judges happen. Yeah. That would be a fascinating experiment.
Yeah. It'd be good.
By the way, the greatest idea, it hit me while you said it and then it really resonated even more after. Was you telling Devin that for the longboard tour they need to combine the men and women's?
How great would it be? Because I feel
so great.
The 15-year-old girl, I didn't watch any of it, but so I'm going totally off the seat of my pants here. But I would imagine the still photos I saw of that 15-year-old girl who won looked as good in the stills as Jill Tudor, right? And so having her go against Jill Tudor, what? I mean, talk about Battle of the Sexes. Talk about putting surfing on blast and the longboard tour of all things on. I mean, if Devin did that, Devin fucking Howard, you better do it. If Devin did that, he would totally supersede the CT in terms of coverage. ESPN would get on that. I mean, at least for a few minutes, they would say there's an actual man v woman competition.
Like, happening. So this is where Elo comes in, is he could get this pumped through the New York Times and everywhere else to cover it. And it's sincerely, there's no disingenuousness in this. Like, this is sincerely the best way to judge longboarding surfing is by this criteria. And in this criteria, muscle doesn't matter.
Because there's no...
upper body doesn't matter versus lower body.
There's no power carbs,
no.
Right? I mean, and the girls...
Joel barely did a turn the entire time and he won just by hanging five.
And the girl can do a drop knee bottom turn as good as a guy, right?
Totally. Like, and she can hang on the nose as good as the guy. The guy can do it as good as the girl. Like, I mean, style matters. And
I see it in Cardiff all the time that, like, I mean, there's so many fruity, you know, dancy longboarders there. The girls are just as good as guys.
Totally.
Like, just as fun to watch. Even more enjoyable to watch half the time.
So this is the perfect sport to really do a commingling of genders. And then it's the perfect time in society and history for it to just catch wildfire.
And talk about being progressive. It puts the equal pay thing just to absolute shame. Like, equal play, equal playing field. Exactly. I mean,
this is so good.
It's really good.
I cannot believe.
Do you think when they do it, because for sure they're going to do it, that credit will come to this room right here? Or do you think it'll be like Elo pounding his chest?
We need to lean on Warshaw to mark this moment in history.
Yep.
On EOS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Because I don't think they'll acknowledge it. I don't think the WSL.
No, for sure not. It'll be like the WSL, as the most progressive, forward thinking organization on earth, right, has decided to.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot.
Well, good thing you're out in space throwing messages back.
Throw just giant nuclear blasts.
These things happen on the fringe, dude.
Yep, they do.
Speaking of Joel Tudor.
Beach grit favorite, Joel Tudor.
Why is he a beach grit favorite, by the way?
Oh, man. If just Google search Joel Tudor and beach grit. There's got to be like 100 stories.
No, I know. But when you put that in the headline, beach grit favorite, it was as if that means that you endorse Joel Tudor, as if beach grit endorses Joel Tudor. I feel like the result of most of those stories are poking fun at Joel Tudor.
Obviously. Yeah. That's the best.
So he's not favorite.
He's my favorite. Anybody who's...
Favorite to lampoon?
Oh, man. A favorite just in, like, the content that Joel, he doesn't do it as much anymore now that he's a serious world champion threat. Like, but just his popping off at the mouth, I'll take that every day of the week. It's funny. Kelly Slater, speaking of, DM'd Beach Grit yesterday, very hurt with our coverage of his wave pool.
Really?
Yeah.
What did he have to say?
Said something like, something about you guys just love clickbait or something. And Derek's response to him was just, God, yes.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'd love to know where you guys went wrong in the coverage of the wave pool. The headline that I liked was...
Noted environmentalist?
Yeah, noted environmentalist builds 18 million gallon wave tank, you know? Are you looking it up right now?
I'm looking at... Kelly said, you guys love nothing more than clickbait. And Derek's response was, God, yes.
Of course, Kelly. So noted environmentalist was very funny.
I think he feels those, like, but I put in the story, I said they're claiming that it's way less than a golf course, which is all full-on bullshit. I mean, not that it's less than a golf course, but come on. Where did you get those numbers? Give me real proper numbers on, and what kind of water also. I would imagine that many golf courses are being watered with gray water, right?
Probably,
yeah. Where there's no way you can have gray water in a swimming pool.
Right.
And so there's so many layers of greenwashing happening right now. And I just wish we really got off of topic here. We really swung to a new one one off. But
we'll come back.
Okay.
This is on the notes anyways.
I like Kelly Slater... Just be honest. Just be, either say I'm a full-on hypocrite. I am the world's largest hypocrite. I own it. I wear it. That's what I am, right? I like to be green when it serves me. I like to make a lot of money. So when greenness gets in the way of me making money, then I make money, right? Where if it comes to making a sustainable brand called Outer Gnome that uses fishing nets and all that kind of stuff, I'll do that because whatever, like that's marketing too, right? If it comes to me flying laps around the world to chase waves and just spewing CO2 in the air and then building a giant wave pool in a drought-stricken desert, when Two others are going into that same desert, by the way. The only one that's sustainable there is Shane and Kalani's.
Why is that sustainable?
Because it's in an existing wave pool. They're just taking Wet and Wild and
But Wet and Wild's been out of business.
Sure, but it's still
it's been dry.
Sure, but it was a wave pool. I mean, it was a water park that had an existing water flow. I don't
But that's still not sustainable.
No, but they're not
sustainable.
It's not sustainable, but that's the least like they're the ones, they're the only of the three that can claim any kind of mantle to, hey, we're not building anything that didn't exist before. We're just refilling a pool that existed, you know,
it's in less impact.
Yeah, less impact. But Kelly, like, just come on, Kelly. Just say, I don't give two shits about the environment. I literally don't.
Number one, I don't think Kelly has ever claimed to be an environmentalist.
I mean, he has a big, yes, for sure he has. His, all the Outer Known ads were all about
Kelly. Yeah, his business.
Sure, but Kelly was pounding his
business uses environmentalism as marketing. His business is.
We're gonna do a deep dive here and see how many times Kelly Slater spoken out on environmentalism.
I don't disagree with you, and I'm actually going to argue for your points, but I do want to kind of try to get it right, at least. I don't think he's ever claimed to be an environmentalist, and his businesses always have an environmentalist bent to them. So I think that I think it probably matters to him on a personal level, environmentalism and all
he,
that stuff.
He wants to feel environmental.
Right. So that is kind of the detail here is I think they're using those things strictly for their marketing benefit because the optics are good. I do not think the world needed another clothing brand. And I think another clothing brand actually does way more harm than good. And whatever minimal amount of reworking the system that they're trying to do will not translate to the way that any other major, that the way H&M does their sourcing and manufacturing, you know? So if they're trying to rework the wheel, it's not going to have any real implication. They're also never going to sell enough product to
make a real difference.
No, to like take away from H&M's business anyways. And I think also like there is a big move right now. Like Delta claimed that they're going to go carbon neutral in the next 10 years or whatever. None of that makes a difference. None of that means they're changing over to go solar fueled airlines or anything like that. They're still using jet fuel. All they're going to do is basically be planting trees.
Yeah.
Their carbon neutral thing means they're going to be offsetting the carbon, which by the way, could be a good thing, but it's all for optics. They're not going to make any difference.
Yesterday to me, I even took a picture of it at the Hollywood building I was in. I went to throw something away. They had like a snack bar thing with all normal products, right? Like it wasn't, I mean, fine. There's some organic, whatever, all fine and good. But, you know, Cheetos and just regular stuff, normal stuff that makes normal trash. I went to throw something away and open the thing. The two spots in the trash can were compost and recycling. So I could throw my Cheetos bag into either compost or recycling, where I'm sure everybody throws, it's just trash, right? I mean, that is landfill trash.
Yeah.
But just by putting it in recycling, I got to feel like I recycled my Cheetos bag, or I could have maybe even composted my, right? Where right. It just did. And I don't know why the greenwashing things makes me frustrated. All it is marketing. It just annoys when Kelly does it, I guess. That's just rude. But it annoys when Kelly does it to me more than others.
I think you're right to call out the hypocrisy in that adding another clothing company, certainly the wave pool thing, is so counter to the environmentalist movement.
I mean, it's...
And then using it for marketing...
About environmentalism.
Is the real hypocrisy.
I mean, it's egregiously hypocritical. And I'm all fine with hypocrisy, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't care about hypocrisy. Just own it. Just say, I am a hypocrite. I am branding my wave pool as green. Snigger, snigger.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
So do you think three wave pools can exist in the desert?
No, but I'm so... This is the most thrilling thing that's happened in surf in the last year.
Okay.
So, much to Ash and Goggin's chagrin that the Hurley takeover was not the best story in the last 10 years.
So there's Desert Surf.
Yep.
Which, by the way, each of these have surfers attached to them.
Yep.
Are these surfers investors in these projects, or are they just ambassadors for the project?
I would imagine that they have some equity.
Okay.
And
they're consulting, like, to help with how to build out the
waves. I think Kalani and Shane, for theirs, are actually the not only the brains behind it, but have, I don't know how much skin they have in the game, but they're like,
okay,
they are actually the business.
So that is the Palm Springs Surf Club.
Yes.
Which you mentioned taking over the existing property. The Hobgoods and Josh Kerr are involved with a company called Desert Surf, or a project called Desert Surf. And then Slater's, of course, was just announced. And that's a huge project that's going to be built on, I forget how many acres it was.
It was many with like
canals. 400 acres.
It was like canals to sup through and hydrofoil through and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was like a
same development company that built the Yellowstone Club.
Yep.
Like, it's super high end playground for the elite. And there are going to be resident. There's going to be a hotel. There's going to be residences on the property. The residences are going to sell from $1 million to,
I think it's $1 to $5 million
homes in La Quinta. And part of this is going to have a giant wave pool. And by the way, the wave pool is only accessible to hotel guests.
Yep.
So I think that
it's and homeowners, right?
Oh, probably.
I mean, yeah, I think
that would make sense. Home, so that they haven't shown any of the what the model looks like, but realistically, this is going to be a country club model. This is going to be, you can come, Kelly Slater Wave Co. makes the perfect wave, and you can go surf those other pools and get a bunch of waves an hour and fight it out with the dregs of humanity, you know, or come surf our pristine giant pool. It's the largest footprint. It's got the longest wave, appealing, perfect barrel. But you can only do it if you pay the country club fees.
Sure.
And the hotel will probably be, I don't know, $700 a night or yep. something like that. So yeah, you can spend the $700 a night and then also pay the pool fees. Which are going to be exorbitant.
What do you think? I mean, the quote that Kelly said about it being a totally new design interested me greatly, maybe more than others. Do you think he's really pulling a new design, or do you think they are going to take basically the train model, have a sled running both sides of the pool, so you got one wave, the other way, right? I mean, because theoretically you could do that at their existing facility.
I think, yeah, it's an updated version of their current model. So the train probably goes underground.
Yeah.
So it's quiet okay. and you can't see it. It's less disruptive.
Okay.
But it's still the foil underwater that's, the drag underwater is creating the wave.
Okay, so it's, oh.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. So they just drop the whole thing because you're digging it. So yeah. You just dig the thing, train underground. All of a sudden, there's this wave that pops up as the... Okay,
and they can change... They could obviously make it bigger than the current ones and change the bottom contours, but it's the same general technology.
And do you think... He also said that there's going to be like beginner waves on the inside. So just the backwash hits another... Or they could have even like a wave garden-esque little...
Whitewash.
Yeah.
10 beginners getting up on the whitewash.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Okay.
If you're paying the country club fee, I mean, you kind of want a little bit of exclusivity.
Do you think that Kelly's wave is, you've surfed now, which ones? You've surfed all Waco, Wave Garden, and Kelly's. Is Kelly's wave that much better than the, and or the potential for Kelly's wave, that much more fun than the others?
Where you use two different words, better and more fun.
I'm going to say more fun.
It is better. It's not more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, for the country club person who wants the best, then he can claim, yeah, I have the best. I reckon Kelly's is getting built for sure, right? With the investment...
As far as I know, yes.
I mean, the investment people behind it, Michael B. Schwab, Charles Schwab's son, is an investor. Kelly, and the fact that the Yellowstone Club is slated to build. I mean, I don't know. That one seems like it's got a pretty good shot of getting built. As does, I mean, the Wet n Wild one. The Palm Springs Surf Club, I think that's going, yeah? So do you think they're all going to get built?
I believe that the Kelly's one will get built. I don't know enough about the other two to really weigh in on that. The more interesting thing to me is, even if they all get built, can they even exist?
I mean, it's...
I don't think they can exist. Like, realistically, I don't think these things succeed. I think there's an element of grouping that actually elevates all three of them, because I would not have surfed the Austin pool nor the Waco pool unless the other one existed.
Sure.
I wouldn't have gone strictly for Waco. You know, I went because you could do two things.
I mean, Palm Springs is now going to be Surf City USA if they're all up and running.
And it's more accessible. The other thing was getting to the Texas ones, you got to get a plane ride from pretty much any normal surf community. The desert one is accessible for San Diego, LA, Orange County, Santa Barbara, even. So there's a lot of surf communities that'll do that drive. But It's a lot of water.
It's a lot of water.
I guess there is the infrastructure in place already for, you know, Coachella is going to attract more people in Stagecoach. So there's enough hotels. There's enough freeway access.
I mean, they're all building hotels, or the, right. I don't know if the Palm Springs Surf Club one is, but the Urban or Desert Surf is building a hotel too.
Gosh. Yeah, I guess maybe there is a sustainability.
I mean, my instinct, yes, is obviously not, but I've been so wrong so many times in my life. I think maybe it works. Maybe they all somehow work and Palm Springs becomes a weird inland surf mecca as part of whatever else it is, right? Like where people from around the country and around the world for that matter book trips to Palm Springs to surf for a week like they would Indo or anywhere else. Like, because they know it's probably same cost as an Indo boat trip, you know, but they just probably feel more comfortable. I mean, with the way the world is kind of becoming more and more paranoid, I think, Palm Springs, besides fully running out of water and Kelly Slater personally draining the world of its last drops, you know, there's never going to be any problems out there. Like, no social unrest, no government change.
Unlimited amount of land to develop.
Completely.
Too. And it already has world-class restaurants.
Yep.
It has world-class hotels. It has music festivals.
World-class gay scene.
Golfing. Endless golfing.
A big gay scene.
I wasn't dodging it. I was acknowledging it.
I just think that's important for surfing. Having a vibrant gay scene is more in line with surfers' general ethos than the other things.
It makes sense as we're discussing it that there are a lot of reasons to do that surf trip more than the Indo surf. It's strictly to get waves.
I mean, that's the thing.
This allows you to take the family and do a bunch of other things.
The Indo surf trip is for a surfer, where I think there's a lot of just surfers out there, right? Who are like a little afraid of maybe a reef pass, you know, like are a little timid when it comes to going to even Indonesia, like thinking, oh, you know, it's a kind of third world, like, you know, just the where, oh, but they still like to surf. They're just not a surfer.
You get to go surf and not give up any of your creature comforts.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. And you can feel like, I mean, stinking Schwab's quote in there was so obnoxious. His like something about, I can't remember it exactly, but in their press release was something about, I wouldn't have been able to get as good as I am as quick as I can or could without a wave pool or something like that. Something to that effect of like where you're going to get a lot of people who want to think they're going to get good at surfing by the repetition of a wave pool and or where it will make them better, right? Where you can go get your reps pretty quick and you can get your little snappy top turn way quicker than you could have had you gone to, you know, Nicaragua or Mexico or somewhere else where you were both fighting a crowd for waves and or, you know, having to wait for sets.
You know what's weird? I find myself slowly going over to the dark side. Because like if you take Schwab as an example of, he's not going to just paddle out at a random day. I don't know where he lives.
Sure.
San Francisco maybe?
Yeah.
You know, or LA. So let's say he lives in San Francisco. He's not going to just go paddle out on a random day in Ocean Beach. Because he's thinking, oh, I got a trip to Indo next week.
Yeah.
And then I've got a trip to Hawaii the week after. And then I'm going to surf the wave pool. So you know what? I'm just going to go to the office today. I'm almost getting into that mindset myself, even though I don't do nearly as much travel as he does. Like, I'm at the point where surfing a random day at home doesn't have nearly the allure that it used to because I'm going to go somewhere.
Hawaii.
I'm going to focus my energy on that thing over there.
I mean, I totally think, and again, could be wrong like I always am, but that the wave pool surfer is not going to be an ocean surfer necessarily.
That's what we're going to see.
That they, like, getting cold, getting crowded, fighting, waiting for waves, you know, waiting for wind, waiting for tide, all this kind of stuff is going to be when I'm going to Palm Springs next week. I'm just going to wait for that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I wonder how, because part of what, I don't know, I think the growing up surfing in the ocean, there's a certain allure to it for the ocean surfer,
totally.
Right? Which if you grew up surfing in a pool, why would those things, why would the things that are a pain in the ass, the things that are a pain in the ass about surfing are what I still love about surfing. But if I didn't grow up loving them and having them be part of surfing, why would I want them? Why would I choose to sit with a grumpy local?
It'd be really curious to see Michael B. Schwab out in the water at our local beach breaks.
Yeah.
Like, could he even get in position for a wave? Could he battle it out when the set comes? Like, can he duck dive? Yeah, you know?
No idea.
It'd be weird.
Yeah.
And maybe he could. I don't know.
I mean, maybe he's a
ripping surfer. And maybe he surfs in the ocean all the time. Yeah. I have no idea. He's not a ripping surfer. I've seen his wave pool clips. They're okay.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he's not bad. But
did you see Elo getting almost non-tubed? Getting non-tubed with paddle dragon?
I did see that.
Man.
Yeah.
I can't believe that we let this happen.
We
let a supper just take over everything.
I liked your angle on it. Yeah, I'm not offended by it as much as I should be.
I'm not offended. I'm just like, we got totally bent over and spanked.
You're right with the carbon fiber paddle.
Yeah.
I want to direct some of your ire towards foils, though. Like, us directing it back at SUP, the trend is already kind of gone.
I've never been burned by a foil. I've never had I've never had a foil sit way beyond the lineup, or that I can see stroking over from the peak down the beach, because he sees the peak I'm sitting on better. Stroke over, sit out the back, and stroke into a wave. Like, fuck those guys. That sup is the absolute worst of them all. And once a foil starts, when Kyle Lenny hops his way across the Pacific and drops in on me at Cardiff, then I'll hate foils too.
Yeah.
But it has never happened. I saw a bunch of foils in Hawaii, right? Hawaii is a funny place. Back to Hawaii very quickly, for emotionally embracing all kinds of different surf craft. Like, you'll see grown men on boogie boards having the time of their lives, foiler out the back, kite foiler somewhere, suppers doing whatever they're doing, and none of it is annoying in Hawaii. It all feels like it's a water world paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really see, or where I was, there wasn't much commingling, right? The foiler wasn't coming into
everybody
the lineup.
Knows their place.
The supper was way out the back doing some who knows what. The boogie boarders were riding some weird little slabby thing, and the surfers were on the peak doing whatever. Like, everybody was doing.
People ride the right equipment for the right waves, and there's that many much diversity in waves that they all have
many kinds of equipment
to do those things.
Yeah.
The problem is, for all things, when people go to Hawaii and they have such a good time on vacation, they kind of come back here and try to transpose that onto.
They try to sup here.
Or wear a puka shell necklace, or wear a Tommy Bahama shirt, or a Ren Spooner shirt, or their sandals, or whatever. Like, no.
Leave Hawaii in Hawaii.
Exactly.
But the dance.
You're not drinking a Mai Tai at home tonight.
No, I don't. I only do it in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Like, I've never mixed a Mai Tai at home. I leave it in Hawaii. But the damn sup, the scourge of surfers. Like, boogie boarders, nothing. Boogie boarders are cute and fun, right? Boogie boarders were cute and fun. Now then became embarrassing. Now are the hardest charges out there, right? So that's the boogie arc. Good on you, boogie boarders. I tip my cap to you. Never been in the way. Never any problem with the body boarder, right? Have you ever had a problem with the? I mean, maybe a personal problem with one, but never as a group of people.
No,
they
surf different waves,
and it's great, awesome, good. Suppers trying to surf your waves. Fuck them all. And now one is president, CEO, the owner of professional surfing, the face, the voice. We just got whipped. We let it happen.
We did. Equinor.
Yeah.
Pulls out.
Do you care?
Well, I mean, I think it's a good thing that they pulled out. The line of questioning that I had for you is more like, surfers are claiming this as a victory.
Yeah.
Did surfers have anything to do with this at all?
I mean, I have no idea. The chest pounding afterwards of, we changed the world, and what else can we do? What should we take on next? Is like, all of it's vaguely laughable to me.
Yeah.
Let's say they did. Let's say the paddle outs and all that. There was enough in Australia. There was enough visual kind of eye candy with all these surfers protesting that got the, I don't know, turn the electorate against, even though this wasn't up for election or anything, but just turn the population against Equinor. If the noise was loud enough where it was part of what kicked it over, then good. I mean, good on them. But like, I don't even know. Everybody became an expert. Oh, that's a crazy thing. Everybody all of a sudden became an expert in deep sea drilling and what it was going to do and what it does, right? Where I'm not all pro deep sea drilling, but for sure, as we saw in the Gulf of Mexico with that spill, I mean, those oil rigs, deep sea, you know, when it goes bad, it goes very, very, very bad. So I totally, completely understand not wanting to have one of those things off Australia's coast. But everybody acting like they're experts in the nuances of deep sea drilling is pretty silly.
There's two experts. There's Sean Doherty did become an expert, and Damian Cole probably became an expert throughout this whole
experience. I mean, did Sean Doherty really become an expert?
Yeah. I mean,
you think so? Do you think he knows the real serious ins and outs of deep sea drilling beyond
expert? No,
but beyond also whatever the hippie talking point is, right? Did Sean go up and sit with Equinor and really say, walk me through the process? Did he go out on an oil rig, you know, wherever they have them, and watch how it's done?
I don't know that he did those things, but I spent time with him last year in March when I was there, and that this thing had been going on, let's say, for 6 months at that time since he got involved in it. And yes, his level of studying and commitment to it, and like, he's a journalist, by the way, by trade. So like, his level of journalistic kind of investigation was absolutely rigorous.
But I guess, and maybe correct me where I'm wrong here, I always felt that his journalistic thing was pointing in one direction, like, this cannot happen, right? I mean, he was championing, he wasn't a neutral judge here of like, hey,
that could be,
I'm going to take a journalistic look here. He was an activist,
yeah,
right?
And he was anti.
And
I'm not sure why or how he became anti, to answer your question.
Sure, but so that's where I will say, you're great. You had an angle and you went and you studied things along that fell in line with your angle.
Right.
But you weren't doing a open-ended, you know, hey, what if deep sea drilling is like the answer to all our problems? Not that I think it is, but Sean Doherty never had that question ever pop in his head, nor did he look in directions that would have.
He may have, dude. I honestly can't answer that question. That's a good question. But so back to the original point, though, is I wonder, I'm again glad this happened the way that it happened, all that sort of stuff. I think protesting is important. I don't want to minimize the importance in that. It's changed policy, you know, for the better for a lot of things. But in this specific example, the visuals are compelling. You see all of these surfers paddling out. The surfers do the paddle out in November 2019. The very next month, the government approved the drilling.
Yeah.
So that would indicate that the protest didn't work. Then Equinor comes out this past week or whatever and says that they've abandoned their plans. $200 million proposal to drill in the Great Australian Bight. They are abandoning due to
market forces.
Economic, it doesn't pencil out on paper. Basically, the economics no longer work for us, which is something that Chevron had figured out in 17, I think, and BP had figured out at some point. They had all withdrawn. So they're stating, no, it's just economically, it had nothing to do. They didn't even address the protesting. They're just stating it had nothing to do with the, or it only had to do with the economics of it. So I'm saying, okay, well, protests in November, government approves in December, Equinor pulls out due to financial reasons a couple months later.
And claiming a big victory.
So now the surfers are claiming a big victory. Did we have anything to do with it or not?
No. I think Equinor, I mean, my personal opinion is I think Equinor would have happily drilled directly through every surfer in Australia.
I think so too.
To get to that oil if there was going to be profits, you know, X.
And I also think they're just going to go somewhere else and do it there.
Yeah.
They're going to get their oil.
Sure. They're going to find a better way and or whatever. Sure. Right. Yeah. The surfers, I don't think at that level, who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So Long Tom on Beach Grit interviewed Damian Cole, asking him that specific question. He was like, hey, you know, were they just stating that it was a financial reason that they pulled out? And Damian's answer to it was, yeah, it obviously is, because they've done the math. They did the math years ago before they even decided to start going through all this process. So why would they then change the math now? So that is an interesting point. I don't know that that's entirely true. You, with any business venture, you find new expense as the business progresses.
I mean, it may be part of it. Maybe where the surfers did have a play, possibly, was maybe the Australian government was going to give, you know, tax benefits and all this kind of stuff that was going to make it more profitable.
Yeah.
And that the protests made the government shy about, you know, helping out more or something like that. Like, maybe there's some back room. Hey, you know, basically you could pay half tax and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
I think about even with Kelly chiming in on your DMs, I'm realizing that it only really gives whoever is the protester is, it only adds fuel to their fire by engaging with it at all.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'm shocked that Kelly even,
I mean, chimes in. That's one of the greatest parts about Kelly, though, is his inability to Like, I feel that, but also what makes Kelly, for me, twice as interesting as Laird, or 10 times as interesting. I mean, part of it is that Kelly actually surfs and Laird's a kook, but really, Laird has never chimed in. Laird has never engaged. I can't, if I saw a DM from Laird, I would be so blown away.
Right.
Like, he's not a person to me. He's just a concept.
Right.
Kelly's a person, which makes Kelly more fun to poke and prod, but then also more enjoyable to praise.
Agreed. And that's great for you that you find him more interesting. But for Kelly and Laird, I don't think it matters at all. Laird's stock hasn't gone down one bit by not engaging. So there's one business model that you would think is like, oh, well, they are a media entity and I want to partner with the media entity and make sure that my name's still in whatever. But Laird's stock hasn't gone down.
No. I mean, I think
by Kelly's not engaging.
Oh, for sure. I think Kelly's smartest thing would be not to engage.
Right. And it only is going to, like, him clearly being affected by your headline only wears him down. Like, it gets in his head and makes him.
But angry. I still think, I mean, again, and Kelly does not need the surf market. Kelly is transcended surf, right?
Exactly.
Kelly is. But the fact that Kelly still cares and still consumes surf makes me like Kelly personally more. Much more.
He would be wise to keep his head clear and just not engage.
But please don't, Kelly. Please don't. But I wonder though how much of Kelly still being a surfer, still wanting and needing to engage with surfers, is what gives Kelly his sort of Superman longevity. Is that he gets some kind of energy from it too, right? He gets energy from still being part of the community. That Laird gets his energy from ice baths and fake coffee creamer.
Turmeric.
But Laird's lack of engagement. I mean, Laird is so cut free from surf, in my opinion. Like, the only people I hear talk about Laird literally are people who do not surf.
Yeah, but he's that example that you're talking about. Right. He's the example that you're talking about in Hawaii, where he's probably spending more time in the water than anybody else.
For sure.
On a bunch of different variety of crafts. So he's more simultaneously more surf and less surf than any other human on the planet.
I'm going to say, though, surf and the Hawaii waterman thing are two separate things.
Like, but I think he's still... Well, that's an interesting point. Do you think he gets on a shortboard
Never.
Ever? Or a longboard even?
Ever. Ever. He's either foiling, foil supping. He's doing some bizarre thing.
How weird would it be to have him paddle out next to you in the lineup?
On a
shoulder
shortboard.
To shoulder? Like, yeah, on a shorter
board. I mean, I don't even... I can't even imagine...
paddle for a wave.
I honestly can't even think that he could surf, paddle for a wave, and surf a shortboard anymore.
That's so funny.
Do you think he could? I mean, I'm sure he could, but he would look as kooky as me.
Yeah.
Like, I could probably surf as good as Laird Hamilton.
Yeah. That is scary.
It's true, though, don't you think?
Weird.
Don't you think it's true?
I do think it's true.
Yeah.
I think it's true.
I bet he would even have a trouble pumping down the line and stuff.
Yeah,
like, not for sure. Like, he's kind of overbuilt and stuff.
He needs a 30-foot wave to even get going.
I mean, that's it. I mean, it's amazing. In shoulder-high surf, I'm better than Laird Hamilton on a shortboard.
Amazing.
I feel really good right now.
This is the headline.
Yeah.
This is amazing. It's interesting. So in regard to those guys chiming in or not, it's interesting how bifurcated or just segmented the surf world has become. It's so new. It never was that way when we were growing up. And I was thinking about Jamie O'Brien in this regard too. Like, the fact that he's created his own platform where he does not need promotion from any other entity in surf.
Zero.
And he's created his following through YouTube and his vlog. He never has to chime in with anything that you or I or any other portion of surf media ever says again. He doesn't even need to engage with the surf brands that used to be potential sponsors. He can formulate all of that on his own terms. But what's most interesting about it to me is that he's a hardcore surfer. Like, I wouldn't think that what he's doing really translates to a broader audience. But I get emails from guys, listeners, who are like, hey, look at like the 15-minute and 32-second mark of this random vlog that he did. And he's pumping out these things weekly. Look at the 15-minute mark. Look at, like, when he says this one thing, it makes me think that he completely disparages this other thing. The commentary that they're giving me is deep, deep thoughts. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're watching this, that. I could see maybe you turning it on and looking away. And then when he paddles out a pipe, you look back at it. But the fact that you're watching it this intensely, and these things are 30 minutes long and you're watching two a week, is insane to me.
I mean, I think Jamie O'Brien is, and always has been, a great showman, which gets taken for granted. He is a magnetic showman. I mean, he puts on a good show. He always has, from when he started making his own movies to, you know, every part of his thing has been to put on a show, and he puts on a good show.
And he's a super talented surfer.
Exactly. And that's like the that combo of him being a wonderful showman. And I think he understands like the beats of a showman, like in a very musical theater kind of way, yeah. Right? Like where he understands peak and valley in this like almost physical comedy in a way that no other surfer knows. And so he's actually entertaining people in a way that even, you know, more serious surfers or whatever don't entertain people.
Right.
Like Jamie entertains.
You're right.
He is entertaining. And you'll watch a Jamie, and I get your point that I don't sit and watch them religiously. I rarely do watch them. But when I do watch them, they don't annoy me at all. Like Ben Gravy, time for some online hate. Ben Gravy has more fans, like passionate fans, than anyone else. I say one even hint that I might be at all making any critique of Ben Gravy, and guarantee I'll get both DMs, emails, and comments that say like, "Knock, fuck you. He surfs better than you. He's awesome. He's like a breath of fresh air."
You know what's funny is I get those comments. They come through Facebook Messenger.
I don't even check Facebook.
That's the thing. I don't even go on Facebook. And anytime I get a message, it's from one of Ben Gravy's fans.
Yeah.
And I'm like, of course his fans use that medium. Yeah. You know, like that only validates my point.
But to me, Ben Gravy is not a showman like Jamie. He just annoys.
I think he's only a showman.
But he's really annoying.
Yeah, agreed. But showman can be annoying.
Sure.
But I think his only thing is that he's a showman. He doesn't have whatever. He doesn't have like the
surf ability.
Well, certainly not the ability of Jamie as a surfer, but also not the awareness of where the joke is. Yeah. Like Jamie, you said he knows the beats and the valley. Like, Ben doesn't know that.
Yeah.
He's just going to come out with jazz hands, you know, and like do it as loud and as colorful as possible. But Jamie understands the salt, the savory and the sweet, and like where to add the salt, where to add the grit. Like,
I mean, Jamie, for his audience and for not his audience, I'll say for the American mainstream audience, is goldmine. I'm surprised he doesn't have more. I mean, I'm sure he's doing totally just fine.
I just didn't realize that the audience was as broad as it is. I thought it would only be like hardcore surfers.
No.
And then maybe kids who like the Poopsies character or whoever that Poopies character.
Is Poopy still on there?
I think so, yeah. So I think there's kids who like the jackass stuff. Shenanigans. And then the hardcore surfers who like the pipeline footage. But I didn't know that there was this vast, vast, vast middle audience of 42-year-old accountants who are trying to avoid their workload that are fully watching this
thing. Yeah,
They've already checked Beach Grit twice today, and they checked Stab once, and then they checked whatever else, and there's no contest on. So now they need a 30-minute thing.
Jamie fix.
Yeah.
And he delivers.
Crazy.
He delivers.
Weird to me.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a barrel or not. Should we go to break before we do barrel or not?
Let's do
it. Get paid.
Since we don't have our stinking grooming Manscaped money anymore.
Maybe they'll come back.
I hope so.
We can entice them back. I know we mentioned that on the last show, and I got like five probably DMs of people showing me that they ordered products.
So people will see Manscaped.
Maybe there's a big final push and Manscaped will come back to us.
I hope so.
All right. Well, in the meantime, let's go to break. We'll be back with barrel or not.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than 1 billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's LinkedInJobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Chaz, we're back.
It was a good one.
I don't know if Fidelity.com was a sponsor this time or not, but you're talking about coronavirus earlier and how that creates an opportunity to travel.
Oh my goodness, I wanted to talk to you about this.
You can invest right now. The markets got crushed.
If I had one dime, I would throw that dime into the market somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's down 800, I think, even today, again.
Oh, really?
I think it was when I was driving up. On top of 1,000, whatever, yes, the biggest drop in history yesterday, on top of near 1,000 before that.
So the market, everybody is so sad right now. The markets are down. Woe is me. What I'm saying is, no, no, no. This is the opportunity to jump in with both hands.
Have you seen the video? What is it? Oh, it's so funny. I have to pull the name right now. Hold on here. The buy the fucking dip, you fucking idiot.
No.
It's really, really, really funny.
That is a YouTube video?
It's like one of those, I can't remember what it's called, the Bitcoin memes for Chad Fad fiends. I guess it's Chad Fad.
That's hilarious.
Or something. It's really, really, but it's this woman going through all these market variables and why it's fake. And when the character, I mean, I'll send you the video, just keep saying in his computer voice, buy the fucking dip, you fucking idiot. Just the whole, like, Ben Bernanke's not going to let the thing market crash. Da-da-da-da-da. It's free money. Buy the dip.
The other thing that I will, I am not a financial
Me
expert
either.
By any stretch of the imagination. One thing I will say is, everybody buy it, your 401k is probably in a mutual fund, whatever. It's been proven at this point, you're not going to beat, even the savviest investors aren't going to beat an index fund.
No.
Don't go out and give somebody else money to make trades and lose a bunch of your profits based on their fees. Go buy Netflix. Go buy Apple. Go buy Amazon. That's all you need to know.
And just sit on it.
Just ride it out.
Yeah.
Just ride it out.
I wonder this. I
mean, and those things, by the way, it was not necessarily beneficial to buy in the last couple of years as they've been just reaching exponential growth. But right now, everything's down. Just buy those.
I mean, I don't understand how there's enough people in the market who are pulling out at this rate for 1,000-point daily drops. You'd think, I mean, is there that many unsavvy investors?
Yes.
You'd think that, okay, coronavirus is going to come and go. Maybe I'm going to take a massive hit, but it's going to go back up. Like, I mean, I could see pulling out, expecting it to drop more, and then buying those same stocks at a lower rate. Like, you're losing some money, but you're getting those same amount of stocks at a lower rate. So you're hedging your loss a bit. Like, I could see that kind of pulling out, but I just don't understand what people are thinking when they pull out en masse due to panic that, you know, is a temporary. I mean, it's, again, why I'm going to Europe with the daughter. Like, this is the time to traipse through down the Champs-Élysées alone singing.
Yeah, I completely agree.
While people are locked into their houses.
It is weird to me that people pull out when it goes.
Yeah.
And dips.
Buy the fucking dip, you fucking idiot.
Yep. Perfect advice from our financial segment of the podcast. Well, we will close with Barrel or Not, everybody's favorite segment. Barrel or Not, Chaz, when a lead guitarist sidles up to the rhythm guitarist to smile and make faces together.
Oh, it's such an nah. I want to say it's a barrel. I want to say it's a barrel because it's so cheesy, but I'm not true to myself. I'll tell you what I don't really like. And by don't really like, I mean extremely don't like, is what's Aerosmith's guitarist name? He was married to Heather Locke. I think everybody in rock and roll was at one point married to Heather Locklear, but he was too. He's a real handsome guy. I do not like a flashy showman lead guitarist. Unless the lead guitarist.
That is their sole position. Joe Perry.
Yeah, Joe Perry. Okay. Joe Perry. Very embarrassing man. Like, and so, okay, let's parse this a little bit. Okay. Because I do like Jack White, right? You like Jack White?
Yeah, of course.
I like Jack White. Yeah, yeah. Jack White, I mean, there's a certain amount of theater in playing the guitar, obviously. But I guess I want my guitar playing theater to be directed somehow back toward the music, where I feel when Jack White is playing a guitar, whatever he's doing physically is related to directly to the music. When there's like okay. that sidle up, you know, that showy right. kind of thing, that's not directed at the, that's a separate show. That's a sideshow. I don't want to see the sideshow. Like
okay.
Jimi Hendrix, what he did, very theatrical, but all direct, burning his guitar and all of it, all directed back toward the music, right?
Okay.
His show was the music, and his physical, whatever physical antics were happening were about that music too. Whereas, so when it's, that's what I feel. The sidle up is a separation of, this is me as guitarist here. This is me as show guy here.
Yeah, but you know that those guys have a special relationship, lead and rhythm guitar, and they're sharing some little moment together that you get insight into. That's the gimmick there.
I guess we're
in this group of 50,000 people, and they're having a private moment, and they're letting us be a part of it.
I might like it when Bono and the Edge do it, because I feel the Edge is really awkward about it, and here comes little Bono over, and now he's going to put the spotlight on me, and now I got to go back-to-back with him, and so, like, if the guitarist feels awkward, then I like it.
It's funny how there's such an actor quality to it, where, like, the lead, maybe Bono in that scenario, is like, fully immersed in his singing,
yeah.
And the Edge just is moved by the music over to him, and suddenly they're bumping hits, looking, smiling, doing something, and Bono is surprised by it, so he's like, he's laughing about it too. Like, this has never happened before, you know?
Are you barreling on the...
I'm kind of barrel on it. I always, for some reason, it makes me laugh every time. As if I've never seen it before. As if they're discovering true love, or like love at first sight, and I'm bearing witness. For some reason, it makes me happy.
That's good. I like it. All right. I'm gonna still say no, but I appreciate your barrel. Okay. I'm on the sand watching your barrel.
All right, sweet. Barrel or nah? Therapy dogs.
Oh, real nah. A real nah. I feel therapy dogs, the same about therapy dogs, exactly like I do about Kelly Slater's greenwashed wave pool. Like, if you want to bring your dog on the damn plane, just bring your dog on the damn plane. Like, pay whatever it is, or do whatever you need to do, or whatever. Like, the therapy dog claim, and or real therapy dogs, the only true therapy dog is a dog that helps a blind person walk.
Agreed.
That's it. There's no therapy a dog provides besides helping a blind person walk. You can love your dog. That's fine.
So I knew you were going to be mad at the people who'd bring the dogs on the planes. I was more going to focus it, my take on needing to pet a dog to quell your anxiety is where I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm okay agreed with the blind dog, which is amazing to me, by the way.
I mean, amazing.
Amazing.
Well, and the fact that therapy dogs have stolen the spotlight from...
The blind dog?
The dog
is a shame.
The dog that actually does hard yards labor every day. The person's life is in that blind dog. I like we're calling him blind dogs. Guide dog. the person's life is in that guide dog's hand. Like the guide dog can get a little skitsy and go into the street, and then person's dead.
Never heard of it happening once.
Masters. And all of a sudden you have all these therapy dogs everywhere getting petted and making people feel good.
The therapy dogs are taking all of the affection that was intended for the guide dog.
And sniffer dogs and like police dogs. Dude, sniff stuff out.
And people. God, that reminded me of a joke. I got to think about it before I deliver it. The other thing is the guide dog, by the way, is too dignified to even want your affection.
No.
Every pathetic therapy dog out there will like tail start wagging, begging for you to pet it. A blind dog sticks to the game.
Stoically.
Stoically, and won't even acknowledge a pet. And they would never even take a treat out of your hand.
And I hope that the guide dog goes home as well with the blind owner. The blind owner goes and sits in the chair and fiddles with Braille. I trust that the guide dog dignifiedly goes into its room and goes to sleep. Like, doesn't expect. They don't sit next to the loud talking TV that doesn't play pictures and enjoy a cuddle. No.
Nope.
The guide dog did its job. It's off the clock.
That's all he needed.
Yep.
Was the honor of doing a hard day's work.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, no, therapy dogs, fuck them for taking the spotlight.
Agreed.
For stealing from the guide dog.
And shame on the human beings who have facilitated this whole debacle.
Who needs a pet a dog? Just buy a baby.
Yeah.
Pet a baby or something. Go, why can't there be therapy babies?
Quell your anxiety with drugs and alcohol like the rest of us.
That's what we do.
Yeah. Come on, you guys.
Pussies.
All right. So we're going nah, both of us. All right. Barrel or nah? Wearing a band's t-shirt to their own concert.
Okay. I'm going to say that's a barrel. Wearing, because I feel, yeah, wearing a that band's concert.
Journey t-shirt to a Journey concert.
Barrel. Wearing a Van Halen t-shirt to a Journey concert. Not barrel. To be like, because you know the person at the Journey concert who also has a Van Halen t-shirt, for sure has a Journey t-shirt. They thought they were going to be so cool as kind of like, yeah, it's cool. I like music.
They're a generalist, concert enthusiast in general.
That's what the message they want to put out. And they don't want to be too on the nose with, I like Journey. This is me in my Journey t-shirt at a Journey concert, even though that's what they're feeling in their hearts. David Lee, I do a lot like Kelly being a hypocrite. I don't like hypocrites. Okay. I want the Journey fan with multiple Journey t-shirts at home to wear a Journey t-shirt to the Journey concert.
They have multiple shirts. They're only going to wear one. Should they layer them?
I mean, whatever Journey swag you have, throw it all on.
Okay. But isn't it overkill? I've already paid money for this ticket to go see this concert, which proves I'm a fan. Do exactly. I now need to wear the paraphernalia?
What I'm saying, no, you can wear your blank t-shirt. But okay. If you're going to wear another concert t-shirt just to show that you're not so on the nose as to wear a Journey t-shirt to a Journey concert. I don't even know if this happens anymore, to be honest. I used to see this. I used to really love observing people's outfits out at live music because, you know, it was the one time, more often than not, I feel, the one time somebody really curated their look specifically, like way more than they curate their look ever. And so every choice I feel, and again, I don't know if this is true as much anymore, but back in the day, every choice was a choice, right? They didn't randomly grab shoes, a shirt, and pants, which I feel many people do pretty regularly, right? Those are my rock and roll boots.
Right.
But they can't wear the Doc Martens. They got to be a little bit, like, I mean, Ashton Goggins is a perfect example of this. Ashton Goggins at a concert would be side-splitting comedy.
So this is the genre of music that applies more to than any would be punk rock.
Punk rock and rock.
So at a punk rock concert, the attendee's strategy is to have a more punk rock t-shirt than the other people. So it's not going to be the band that's on stage.
No,
it's going to be a more obscure band that did something more radical. They ate, a live animal on stage or whatever. It's going to be a Gigi Allen shirt.
Yep.
At the Bad Brains concert.
And do you wear your Docs? Do you wear your Converse?
But if you wear the Docs, you got to wear the ones. They have to be worn out. They can't be new ones. Or if they are the new ones, they have to be this,
I mean, that's the thing. But the fact that every decision was a literal choice, like a crafted, labored choice, to me is a fun part, or used to be a fun part, about going to concerts.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so wearing a concert tee to that band's concert?
Yes.
Barrel.
Okay. Just because being on the nose, I think you're just saying, I'm a fan, it's all good, right? I'm not trying to be a cool guy. I'm just, being a fan in general is automatically totally uncool, right? If you're a fan of something, and so really to admit, I'm a fan, I'm uncool.
Yeah.
I'm totally barreling that decision.
Okay, sub-question. The Beach Boys drummer wearing a Beach Boys hat at a Beach Boys concert.
No, that is awful. When the band is sunk to such a lousy level that they're shilling their own product.
He's the only one I could think of.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, he literally does that.
Yeah.
And maybe Jimmy Buffett wears a Jimmy Buffett hat.
Like parrot head stuff, maybe. Or his own merch. Yeah. The band wearing its own merch is no. Unless that band is like so obscure, then it would be, again, like wearing a Journey t-shirt to a Journey concert, where it's just, it's the only t-shirt we have as a band because we put all our money into this band.
It's hilarious that they do that.
I know. But the Beach Boys shilling Beach Boys merch.
Hilarious.
All
right. Well, that was educational. Thank you for that. What else, dude? Beachgrit.com is where people can go.
Go.
Will we be together next week?
Yes. I leave for my traipse through coronavirus heaven in on the 9th, I believe.
That's when I leave for my next trip to Hawaii.
Oh, perfect. Are you going to wear a mask on the plane?
No.
No.
I don't care at all.
Yeah. Coronavirus. Come get me.
You know, I've had coronaviruses in the past, and none of them have really taken me out, and this one won't either.
Yep.
You have to be elderly, I think.
And smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it that they're basing what information we have and thousands of points of stock market drop at this point based upon one city in China where I think it was 50% of the men smoke.
Yeah.
And it's...
It was even more than that.
Yeah, and it really affects your lungs.
And like 2% of women.
Yeah, exactly. And this disease really affects your lungs. Yeah. What if it's just stinking Chinese smokers? All of a sudden, all their smoking caught up to them. And then also they developed a nasty thing in the lab that got out. And
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if I come back dead from Europe.
If you don't die, when will you come back? When is your ticket booked for?
1 week.
Yeah, so me too. So we'll...
9th to the 15th.
Yeah, I'm 9th to the 16th. So we'll be back the following week. Here next week. And we'll have a week off. And then.
Yes.
All right, Chaz. Well, this has been a pleasure. Thanks to the Serving Heritage and Culture Center.
Come visit. There's Duke Kahanamoku's board here.
Beautiful. All right, Chaz. Until next week.
Get barrel.